Oh, you know, Mint is the most polite healer in RPG history. She's always so soft-spoken.
Yeah, her nurse and resurrection spells are the only reason the party survives the final boss.
Final boss? More like every battle. I'm always totally focused on keeping her HP at its absolute maximum.
That is a smart move. Without her, the rest of the party would not last 5 minutes.
Exactly. Even the smallest scratch is met with an immediate high-tier healing item or full recovery spell.
That seems a bit obsessive.
No. My priority is keeping her in mint condition.
Tharus has an annoying habit of teleporting to the other side of the screen right when a big attack is about to land.
Oh, I know, it makes landing a high-level spell or physical combo incredibly frustrating.
He just laughs when the heroes swing the sword at empty air.
Ugh. He's just very good at dousing the party's hope of a quick victory.
Klaus is always worried about finding enough mana to keep his summons active during the long dungeon crawl.
He has to manage his resources carefully, or he'll be left with just his physical attacks.
He spends most of his time negotiating with beings from other dimensions.
Seems to be in a very spirited line of work.
Arch is the only party member who refuses to walk, choosing to hover on a broom instead.
It gives her a significant advantage by keeping her out of the reach of the ground enemies.
It must be exhausting to maintain that level of hovering for an entire 40-hour RPG.
Well, she is clearly trying to reach new heights of magical power.
They're silly and they're goofy, mysterious and spoofy. Kemko makes them loopy, the Backtrack family. Their podcast is a blast, talking games from the past. They break down every class, the Backtrack family.
Beat. Defeat. Complete.
They trash things they abhor, and praise things they adore. They never are a bore, the Backtrack family.
And welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of rpgamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I am your host, Kelly Ryan, and with me, as always, my podcast partner in crime, the crest to my mint, Mr. Matt Mason.
I mean, I am a nutrient-dense, peppery, aquatic green plant from the mustard family, just like watercress. Yeah, nailed it.
See, I was today years old when I learned that that cress was meant to be based off of watercress.
I know, me too. Thank you, Cassandra.
Cress mint, if it's...
That's very true, yeah.
And joining us to celebrate this belated 30th birthday, we've got Cassandra Ramos.
Hello, everybody.
And from our stream team, Leo Grimm.
Hi.
And a little bit belated because it was actually in December, but we already had our schedule full then. But we are now celebrating the 30th anniversary of the release of the original Tales of Phantasia.
Whoop, whoop. And the series as a whole by, association.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I remember this was one of those fan translations that, or one of the first fan translations that I remember that was kind of a huge deal. At least in my inner circle. I don't know about you guys.
I mean, I've heard a lot about it. I never played it, but I've heard a lot about it, especially how they spiced up the translation.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get into that. Believe me. But I feel like one of the most revolutionary RPGs to come out at the time. I feel like it kind of changed how we looked at combat in RPGs, and it had such a deep story.
Long one too, and it's kind of crazy because it apparently started life as an unpublished novel written by Yoshinaru Gotanda, the lead programmer of the game, and they had to cut that down a lot to get it to fit into a video game.
Yeah, I didn't know that bit either. So, learning all sorts of things about this series, or this game in particular, this week. Did you have anything to add, Leogram?
I mean, I don't have the same nostalgia for it because, like, my first moment with the game is through the GBA. I know that, like, in my times when I played, like, basically every GBA game under the sun, I played it a little. I was like, this combat is a bit rough on the GBA compared to, like, other titles. But, like, I'm coming now back to it and, like, I'm finding my way through. Like, I still prefer some other franchises more, even in the same style of combat. But, like, I'm having my time.
Yeah, unfortunately, the only version of this game that we got in the United States is a little bit rough because of the well, I don't know about the localization, but the game does not function very well on the Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, the graphics and stuff are a bit, the sound is that weird, just like lagginess. The translation is kind of gets vilified a bit more than it needs to. It's dull. Let me get that. It is dull. I heard a rumor that maybe it was like the game was translated a long time ago, and it just because the game because but they never finished like developing it, or only translated but didn't localize it. And so it's been sitting in the wings until the GBA version came out. Maybe there, I mean, yes, there's that one weird mistake where somebody autocorrected Ragnarok to Kangaroo, but that's really the only glaring, that's really the only glaring issue.
But without this game, we wouldn't have our beloved Tales games that we know and love today. So, why don't
Apparently
you
there was
take?
an English iOS port in 2014, but
All
that's no longer
right.
available.
Yeah. I'm told that that one sucked pretty bad too because of
Yeah,
it
that's what
had
I've read.
bad monetization
They
because
took
it
out the
was.
song and the skits, which, I mean, what the heck?
Well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we take a brief musical interlude, and when we come back, we will just get right in because there's so much to talk about with this game. Just doing cursory research yesterday, I was like, yeah, there was a lot more to this than I thought there was. So we'll dive right into it. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Tales of Phantasia, released for the Super Famicom on December 15th, 1995. Hence the kind of month late birthday celebration, but month and some change. And then we this game was kind of ported almost, I mean, not everywhere, but ported a lot of places. There was a PlayStation version released in 1998. The Game Boy Advance version that we know and love came out in 2003 in Japan and March 6, 2006 in the US. That mobile version you were talking about came out on March 17th, 2010, and January 23rd, 2014 here. And then there was a PSP version that only came out in Japan on September 6, 2006.
Yeah, they got a full voice acting version too, apparently, like about a year later. Of course, we never saw that either.
Yeah, the PSP was not kind to the Tales series in the US, unfortunately. because we didn't get that version of Fantasia either, and that made me kind of sad. I actually had to import that from Europe.
Wait, do you mean with an Eternia?
Yeah, Eternia. Sorry, but we pretty much all played the GBA version, and the version that I finished was the PlayStation version on my PSP via eBoot, because the ISO and the translation was already patched when I downloaded it, so it was a lot easier to deal with. And I would actually recommend the PSP version for anybody wanting to play it nowadays, especially if you have like a Steam Deck or a Hacked Vita, just because that version seems to be the most accessible. But th there's nothing wrong with the Super Nintendo one either.
Yeah, I kind of wish this would get a newer port, just so at least so, certainly something I could play than this, the GBA, something official. I mean, I guess I should just, bite the bullet and get around to one of the fan translations, but I don't know,
Yeah.
I just have a preference for official releases.
I was bitching about this in our Discord tonight because, there's been kind of a trend of PS1 nostalgia for RPGs last year between the Suikoden 1 and 2 re-release, the Lunar re-release, and the Star Ocean games got a re-release. I'm not sure if I'm missing any off the top of my head, but
I
why
guess there's
they.
Final Fantasy Tactics.
Yeah, F Final Fantasy Tactics. I just don't understand why Bamco has not gotten on board and wanted to put a put out what I called on the Discord a 2D Tales trio. Get that alliteration in there for like the Switch and the PlayStation and all of that.
Yeah, that'd be nice. They seem to be rather busy just porting or, remastering easier games.
See, I would think that the 2D ones would be, well, I guess if they lost their source code, not so much.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
Because we were talking about that pre-show too. But yeah, I am waiting with bated breath for them to do something like that, because it I love I to be honest, as much as I love the modern Tales games, the three 2D ones on the PlayStation respect and well, yeah, on the PlayStation respectively have always been my favorites.
Yeah, so to get around to playing either of the like Eternia, Destiny. I mean, great, and generally to play more Tales games. I think I own more than I've actually played.
That's understandable. But I mean, obviously part of the reason why we didn't get the Super Nintendo one was because in 1995 we were winding down the 16-bit era. But the game also had a special chip in it. What was it called? I wrote it down. High capacity 48 megabit chip to help with the voice acting, because that was kind of a huge deal, was having a song edit with the voice clips and the voice clips of the characters during battle.
Yes, very important. Like the most voice editing I've seen in the like a say Super Famicom or SNES game before that would have been Sailor Moon Another Story. That didn't have a vocal song in it either. Apparently, it's not unheard of, but it is extremely rare.
Yeah, funnily enough, you talked about Tri-Ace breaking off from Tales of Phantasia, the Tales team. The Star Ocean that came out was also had a special chip in it, but I can't remember if that was for the voice or the graphics or both.
Yeah, because that there were internal conflicts at Wolf Team that made Tales of Phantasia, and then they a bunch of them split off and found a Tri-Ace.
Yeah, and back then I always wondered why those two games kind of felt and played similar, because I had no idea of that story when I was younger. But pretty much made history with this game. the origin of the linear motion battle system, which having that in an action or having that in a Japanese RPG was kind of unheard of back then, having actions.
Yeah, inspired by fighting games. And yeah, you know, you could see push, you like, you know, the B button in any direction to use a bunch of skills and just using regular attacks. Although apparently Super Famicom version has a like battle system is slightly different. Where did I see that? It's like you have to choose between like a up close attack and a ranged attack. And there's just some other odd changes, like Chester, the archer, doesn't have any skills. So, and that's another odd. I mean, I guess it's because the series was still starting out in English, but like I don't know about like it, you know, Destiny or Eternia, but in Symphonia they were called techs. Then they're called skills in Tales of Phantasia GBA, and then later they finally decided to settle on calling these special attacks arts, and it stayed that way. They couldn't make up their mind for a while.
And I don't know about you, but I personally liked spamming Demon Fang.
I'm a big fan of Blade Storm, just like
yeah, that one. I whenever I get it, I abuse the crap out of it too.
I mean, you kind of have to, because like certain enemies you want stun locked. If you ever see a caster, that one gets stun locked. Or you guys remember basilisks?
I'm shooting a beam.
Your team is stoned.
I mean, there's a chance they won't get stoned, but I mean, like, why take that risk? Although if you have Arch in the party, she's like floating above the beam and can kind of take him out that way.
Yeah, I mean, I usually had like accessory that like protected Mint, and if Mint is protected from getting turned to stone, she could unstone everyone else. However, if she gets turned to stone, you're out of luck. Or at least I think so.
Is there gold needles, or the equivalent of gold needles?
There doesn't seem to be any items.
There is a remedy item, but like I didn't even figure out that was like a status heal item. Oh no! That was the revive. I think the revived tells you that like it heals paralyzed, and it's like okay, I'm not paralyzed, but like it's a revive.
Yeah, there's a panacea bottle item, but it does not cure stone. But it cures everything else. Poison, paralysis.
Yeah, basilisk is like the nightmare enemy. The enemy you see and you're like, not again.
And there's a one point in the game where you have to collect 5 of their scales in order to continue the story.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's
oh,
fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that one. I think the next most frustrating is like when you have some really tanky item enemies, and behind that some caster that casts really, really fast. And it's like, what do I do against that?
Yep, that's always fun, especially like it was one of those movable golem enemies.
Yeah, I think the most frustrating was like when you get the Pegasus, because like you can, and like that happens for me on stream, you save before that and you're kind of locked into that. Like you can't go anywhere to like level up. So like if you're too weak for the in-air fight and the boss that comes, you're out of luck. And like you only have like 2 characters for those fights. And Chris can't use skills. It's really weird.
Yep, kind of annoying. I mean, riding on Pegasus is kind of fun, but when all you're doing is just slashing down his Gungnir spear, it's a little repetitive.
Yeah, you basically do just auto attacks during the whole fight and tell Arch, who's following you, to cast like her magic. I think I got through it because I gave Arch something that she could cast faster, because like else I wouldn't have gone through it.
Yeah, what was that item? It's
some pendant.
Yeah, it's a equipped.
I only know like
yeah, the mystic.
I had it
yeah, the,
previously. Like yeah, previously symbol. It was on Mint, so she doesn't take like half a day to cast a healing spell.
The mystic symbol, that's what it's called. Quite an essential item in a Tales game. I keep using those.
And I always made a point to keep one of Mint's AoE heals, the one that spawns all the nurses.
Yeah, nurse.
Oh, I didn't
know. Nurse is MVP from Mint.
I'm gonna have a hard time remembering a lot of the names of some of the stuff in this, just an FYI, because
Oh,
it's
yeah,
been so
I
long.
replayed a, I replayed about 33 hours and then played through the ending to try to prepare myself for this, so it's a little fresher. Although a large part of the middle of the game is just based on what I can remember and what I can read up.
I watched a recap video that recapped the whole story, and I couldn't. Well, one, I learned that it was a technical sequel to Tales of Symphonia, Symphonia being the prequel that, since it came out later, but takes place in that. Put it this way, I did not know that there was a Tales timeline.
It's just these two. Well, again, it's these two games, and then you have Zestiria and Berseria that are also connected. And there are other smaller games that connect to. Obviously, you have the original Symphonia, you have Dawn of the New World, you have Phantasia. Following Phantasia is like a Nykiri dungeon. And then following that is another game called Summoner's Lineage. And I believe those are all the ones that connect. Those all take place on Aselia.
Okay, gotcha. And I think there was an anime adaptation too.
Yes, I've never watched it, but yes, and that was released in by Geneon before they folded in North America.
Because the recap I was watching was pulling a lot of footage, especially the stuff with Douse from the anime adaptation. And kind of a complicated story for a 16-bit RPG
Yeah.
because there's a lot of time travel going on.
Pretty, it's a long story too. Like I like look, my last complete file was over 80, basically 86 hours after beating. I mean, it all focuses on defeating Douse, but there is a lot going on in the story.
Yeah, like D Douse is kind of a sympathetic villain because his whole goal is that he's trying to get a mana seed, so that he can restore the mana tree in his world, and he's trying to destroy specific towns that are using mana tech technology, because that stuff is what's draining the mana tree.
Yeah, there's quite a complicated history too, because according to the back, like according to the backstory, it's kind of crazy how long the history of Aselia is, especially if you Phantasia. But like 2,000 years before Phantasia, there was three great civilizations: Odin, Fenrir, and Thor. Two of them got in a war, invented magitech, including the ever so powerful and ever so mana drainy mana cannon. They fired it a few times and it nearly killed the tree, but then Comet came and destroyed one of the cities, and then it ended the war. And so Yggdrasil was trying to heal from that, and then like 2,000 years later, they reinvented the mana cannon, and whoops, that killed off Yggdrasil. Hence the time traveling, because you're trying to go before Yggdrasil is completely killed off in order to maybe get the mana seed. And of course, Douse is really not liking magitech, because magitech was also what caused his world's tree to wither and die.
And some of the I'm gonna do the dumb Doctor Who thing and call a lot of the story timey-wimey
Yeah.
because of how much time travel comes into play. Because how does it starts out in the past, and in order to escape defeat from the four heroes, Douse goes into the future 87 years, and the heroes are waiting for him at that point, 87 years in the future. Future and seal him away using two pendants, and then t 10 years later, somebody's trying to use those two pendants. Let me back that up. Kress, the main character, has one of the pendants, and then somebody from another city has the other pendant, and a soldier named Mars is destroying villages trying to get the two pendants. He eventually does, unseals Douse, and just as Douse is getting ready to wreak havoc, I think the name is Miguel, who's a descendant of one of the four heroes that was originally set to beat Douse. He sends Kress and Ment back in time a
No,
hundred
that
years.
Miguel's his fa is Kress's father. That was
Okay.
Morrison was the guy that sent him
Morrison,
back in time. Losing magic. There's no. I mean, there's magic technology, but it's specifically a spell that can travel through time.
So then you're spending a decent chunk of the game trying to get back to the future, as it were.
Present, because you can actually also visit 100 years in the future too.
I mean, the counterpoint. You spent a lot of time in game collecting summons like they're Pokemons.
That too.
Because like everyone is trying to stop Dows, Klaus is just trying to become the best Pokemon trainer.
Well, because he's very interested in trying to find ways for humans to use magic, because in the world in Esselia, only people with elven blood, either descended from an elf, or you can like literally get a blood transfusion apparently of elf blood to be able to use magic. And but with summoning is a little different, because this gets a little confusing with Symphonia involved. But while you still need to have elven blood to be able to summon, at some point between Fantasia and Symphonia, an elf and a dwarf took these special rings you can get from the summon creatures and modified them to allow humans to make packs, like normal humans without any elf blood, to make packs with the summon spirits and can summon them. So he does that in order to, learn some form of magic, in this case, summoning. I mean, Klaus is a good guy, but he's pretty devoted to like his research on spirits and magic.
And I love Klaus, by the way. I love
Me
him best.
too, but like it's hilarious. Like in the middle part of the game, you just do a couple dungeons just for the express purpose to collect more summons.
And
You
you
do
can
like
like
an I the water dungeon, the fire dungeon, the mine with Maxwell, the mountain for the wind spirits, the tower for Luna.
Yeah, and then there's some bonus ones like you get Azka, the light spirit, by going to one of those civilizations that was destroyed. You can literally make packs with demons. But they're like, oh, and they're apparently not like super evil demons. They just go along with it, which opens up a plot hole because supposedly demons, like mana, is poisonous to them, but Klaus offers them magic to feed on. So did something change, or most likely somebody goofed somewhere?
Oh yeah, and there's gnome. Gnome was the most painful to get. Can we agree on that?
Which one? Sorry?
Gnome,
Oh,
the
gnome.
earth one.
Yes, especially during the battle, because if you don't realize that if you go up close, he's like impossible to hit. You have to like attack him from a distance and order your other characters to do so.
I mean that's like once you reached him. Before that, you have to like get around all the basically invincible gnomes.
They are not invincible to
I mean,
tractor
they're
beam.
not invincible, but like there's very little you can do against them.
And they're not really worth beating up anyway. They're like worth no, like virtually no experience.
Unfortunately, it's been so long for me. I get the summons from all of the 2D games all confused of where and when you get them. Because I've played Eternia more than this one, to be honest. But anyway, and so at some point you face Dowse in the past, and then he escapes to the future. And then you have to go to the lost city of Thor that's underwater to find time travel technology to go back to the future to fa face off Dowse in the future. And an interesting little bit that I'm not sure if it was expressed in the game or not, but because the mana cannon fired twice, Dowse went insane at some point in time. But then in this timeline, the mana cannon only fired the one time, so it didn't kill the tree, and ergo didn't make Dowse go crazy.
Yeah, there's some weird like maybe possibly split timeline, probably just a weird oversight. I mean, time traveling is confusing at the best of times. And he doesn't recognize them either, which kind of confused me. Like, what do you mean you don't recognize them? Are you sure you're from the future or the past? But I guess the timeline was altered, and like the like Kress and the others unintentionally overwrote their descendants being the ones to defeat Dowse, so that changed the timeline too.
It's like I said, it's such a crazy advanced story to have in a 16-bit RPG, of all things. If anything, it's kind of a miracle that they managed to cram all of that story into the game.
Yeah, and crazier still that the story was longer. I mean, I guess it's easy if it was a novel to like allow like a prologue. At least there is like a side novel prequel that more or less retells that part of the original novel. But still, it would have been longer once upon a time.
Yeah.
Didn't the same thing happen to like Final Fantasy IV, I think? Like that was severely cut down.
That I don't know, but really good character development and really good characterizations, like meeting is it Arch or Arche?
I just say Arch. I'm not. Maybe I can look up a pronunciation for Japanese. Let me see here.
Because the video I was watching was saying Arche, but I always called her Arch too.
Maybe it is Arche. Yeah, this looks like it'd be Arche Kurain. I guess it should be Arche. Yeah. Okay. I've been saying it wrong in my head the whole time, I guess.
It's okay. I do it all the time too, especially with older non-voiced games.
Yeah, yeah.
But she's a half elf that shows up,
mm-hmm.
and elves are basically really racist against half elves. And when she shows back up in the elf village, they want to kill her outright. But then her mother saves her.
Yeah, it's they kind of imply they might want to kill her too. But like you do see a scene at the very end that shows them reuniting just outside of Ymir Forest. So I don't know, maybe she just got locked up or something for a while. And her father had told her mother died, so he had lied to her because supposedly with all like the magic tech being invented, the elves decided to go into seclusion and disowned their half-elf, like, you know, children and other relatives. And it's just like, didn't you guys learn anything from 4,000 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, at least the humans have stopped being prejudiced against half-elves at the very least, but the elves, nope. Although that seems to be stunning because the elves are also racist against humans, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess they would. I mean, they live 1,000 years, but you'd still think that'd be, you know, kind of a different scale to them.
Mm-hmm. And then, because she shows up so late in the game, I had completely forgotten about Suzu the Ninja Girl.
Suzu is, she's more of a secret character, because the ability to recruit her is actually kind of complicated. I don't remember it all, but I know it involves, like, finding the village and eventually going to, like, the arena and fighting her brainwashed parents.
And her brainwashed parents kill each other.
Yeah. And, like, she was originally just an NPC in the Super Famicom version.
Okay, so she's
Yeah, she's a bonus character.
Gotcha. Okay.
In all subsequent versions, she's a bonus character. And here's kind of a fun thing for, like, you're a longtime fan of Tales. Her last name is Fujibayashi, which she shares with Sheena from Tales of Symphonia. I mean, they're probably related, but of course that's just, you know, 4,000 years at that point. It's way too diluted, but it's still interesting. Although, if you were ever in the Symphonia shipping scene, both fans of Sheena and Lloyd and Colette and Lloyd, it's Sheena and Lloyd and Sheena and Zelos kind of claim she supports one of their pairings based on hair color alone, which it doesn't even match any of them. So, what are you guys doing? Dear gods, that takes me back.
It just goes to show how kind of old I feel, because mm-hmm. I had marathoned the series back in 2000, I want to say 2010, and I can't remember. I think it was before Zillia came out on the PlayStation 3. I had pretty much played every game in the series up until that point, and I cannot remember half of it now, and what happens when and all of that.
Okay. I'm sorry, did you say something before? Sorry, somebody went up to my door.
Sorry, no, I had marathoned the Tales series back in 2010 before, not Zillia. What was the first one for the PS3? Was it Zillia?
Vesperia?
Yeah, Vesperia.
I mean, I guess we never got that one, but...
Yeah, you're right. So I think it was the first Zillia.
Maybe it was.
Because at that point I had my PSP and was using that to play a lot of the 3D games, and then hooked up my GameCube and played through Symphonia again. And then I, at some point, had played Abyss and not Tempest, whatever that Legendia, which that one was a slog to get through. I don't have the stamina to do game marathons like I did back then.
Yeah, even I try to like stick to playing games in a series like once per year if I can manage. Like I'm still making my way slowly through like the early Dragon Quests. I'm up to six, which I hear is kind of a slog.
For me, it's the Trails games. It's like every year I manage maybe one Trails games and they bring out four new ones.
So I very briefly touched on the story. There was so much more to it than that. Like I said, the time travel stuff felt like that they put a lot of thought into it, and yet not some thought, because it should have split the timeline and it didn't. Like you
it
said.
Might have. I mean, it depends on how you interpret it. It could be depends on how you interpret it, I guess. Like it's confusing.
Yeah. Had a really awesome soundtrack.
Oh yeah, like even on the tiny, teeny, not very good GBA sound system and speaker, like I still love listening to Fighting of the Spirit. Fantastic little song. Like makes you really look forward to fighting the summon spirits.
Huh. And the release of the GBA version in the US collated with the deal to make Symphonia GameCube exclusive at the time.
Mm-hmm. I imagine Symphonia's success was what led the GBA version to be picked up. It did take them like a few years, and that didn't come out until after Symphonia's release in North America.
Mm-hmm. And like, that was a tidbit I didn't know until my research this week, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, you'd think they'd do a better job of trying to like keep things consistent, but again, I pointed out like the difference between skills and techs, and like Daris Carlon is the homeworld of Daos, but in like the actual GBA, like the English script calls it Daris Caron. Like you couldn't keep that consistent, guys, really. And it's supposed to be the same world, the same. It's like a large comet that can that has life on it because of the monotree and things like that. I mean, I guess everything else is relatively consistent, but yeah, I thought that was just a funny little oversight. Daris Caron instead of Carlon.
One of the interesting things I learned about Daos was because he kind of came from the sky and was warning the king of was it Odin, one of the major Magitek empires, warning the king about the disaster that was coming if they used too much mana. That's why he got called the Demon King. Mm-hmm. And at that point, he was pretty much like, "Well, if you're gonna treat me like a demon, I'm gonna act like a demon to stop you." And that's when he'd summon demons of all things, mm-hmm, to try to take out that city.
Yeah, then let me be evil.
Yeah.
So I think like either the novels or even the anime, I think the games itself don't say too much about him trying to convince the kingdoms. It's the anime and like some of the side novels I think Nikiri Dungeon that explains that Faust did try to like speak to the king and the leaders to prevent them from developing Magitek any further. And then they just disregarded him and then wanted to use the mana cannon on him when he was like launching armies of monsters against the kingdom of Midgard. Yeah, that's the name of the nation, Midgard.
Midgard, right.
I wonder what it is about 1995 and time travel. Because like, yeah, we talk how novel it is as a story, but like it's also the same year as Chrono Trigger. Like something must have been in the air that year.
I was going to say, I felt like all of our major good time travel movies like Back to the Future and Bill and Ted were in the 80s.
So the
I mean, the last the last Back in the Future was, I think, 90. So, like, not that far away. Because, like, you have to think, like, games take a while. So, like, maybe they just looked at, like, how good Back to the Future was going and were like, maybe we can do something with that. But, like, that's poor speculation.
And yeah, I never thought about it before that two time travel games came out at the exact same year.
Mm-hmm. Granted, we didn't see one of those.
Yeah. It honestly makes me wonder how well this game would have done if it came out in the US at that time.
I mean, you think, well, I don't know, they might have taken out the song entirely just to avoid paying licensing issues, and they were especially scared of having anything too foreign back then, so never mind leaving in Japanese.
Yeah, and not to mention the game would, I feel like that game would have been like $100 with the special cartridge.
Yeah, with the voice acting.
Because that's also why we didn't get Star Ocean, because that one had a special cartridge too. Not to mention it's 2D game, or 2D games were kind of old hat in 1995, and people wanted nothing but 3D. Yeah, we got Suikoden at some point that year, or around that time, not 1995. I felt like my favorite PlayStation RPGs were the 2D ones. Like even Wild Arms, even though the battle system was 3D.
Yeah, don't know about consoles, but like on PC, it was like around 97, 98, I would say, where like 3D just took off.
Yeah, because that's when graphics cards started getting somewhat affordable.
Among other things, like I think, when was it? DirectX, like that was a big one. DirectX came out. When did that release? It was like 90. It was, I think, 95. Yep, 95. But like a lot of stuff happened for PC specifically that just changed the landscape.
And unfortunately, I did not have, or my first PC was pretty janky back then. So I didn't have a graphics card. I don't think I got a PC with a graphics card until the 2000s.
We had one only because like both parents worked on PCs. So it was like, yeah, it was already around.
Okay.
On the other hand, my parents were like, oh yeah, we can't give our children consoles. Then they just play video games and that's gonna ruin them.
No, my parents knew that they could control me pretty well if they threatened to take my video games away. That was my lifeblood.
Yeah, my parents tried different things. Like at some point, they just took the physical tower away just to realize that it's really, really hard to do school homework without a PC present.
Oh, I'm glad you brought up the PC, because that was one of my first experiences with this game, was the playing the Super Nintendo version on an emulator. And kind of talking about the fan translations, I know the first really famous one. I don't want to say the name of the fan translation
Yeah.
group. It's on romhacking.net. Look it up. But I believe that was the one that had the more spicy dialogue.
Yeah, so they definitely they punched it up and made it a bit more lewd. Perhaps most famously, you had Arch. There's a point where they're on a ship. Arch dozes off, and in original Japanese and the GBA version, she just says things like, "Oh, Cress, we shouldn't." But the that fan translation makes it far more explicit that she's doing certain things with Cress in her dreams.
Yeah, I saw that screenshot floating around before I ever played the game, and I thought Arsh was a dude. Little do I know that it's a little girl, which just kind of made that part even more gross,
I mean,
if you
she's
ask.
17, so
Okay.
She's 17?
Yeah,
I
I mean,
thought
she's a
she was
half elf,
15.
so maybe I think they grow a little more slowly. She is a half elf after all. But yeah, age-wise, she's 17. I think Cress is younger than her at 15. But yeah, and there's also a point where, like, Klaus asks, like, like asks Cress, like, "Oh, which one of these two girls do you like more?" But he says something very off color to her in the fan translation about her.
Yeah, the PlayStation 1 toned a lot of that stuff down, and also made it more consistent for games that had come out since
Oh,
I
Cress is
well
17. Okay.
since Symphonia, at least. Hang on, I'm seeing when the PlayStation 1 came out. Sorry, I'm ha having trouble finding the PlayStation version on romhacking.net. 2007 is when the PlayStation version came out, so Symphonia had long since been released.
Yeah. That was 2004 in North America.
So I'd recommend that version. If you really want a GBA version, they're like $50 on eBay, because it was a late release, so they're not as easy to find. But let's be real. A lot of people played this was one of their first games that they've emulated. It was so ubiquitous back then.
Mm-hmm. Like I said, I'm just a weirdo that really insists on... I mean, I played a few fan translations, but I just feel weirdly reluctant to...
No, I don't blame
you. Official versions.
Usually I'll play a fan translation when I'm just... There's no other option. And that's what I loved about my PSP back in the day. It opened up a lot of... You know, being able to put a Super Nintendo emulator on the thing opened up a lot of fan translation stuff for me. That was the first time I'd played Seiken Densetsu 3.
Now call Trials of Mana.
Yeah. Gosh, what other fan translations did I play on that thing? I think that and Tales of Phantasia was two of the main ones. A lot of them I started but didn't get very far in. But I definitely think this game has left a legacy on the Japanese RPG as a whole. I'm hard pressed to think of non-Namco games that have an action battle system similar to this.
I mean, the one I can think of, and I don't know if it really compares fairly, is Summer Night Swordcraft's Story.
Yeah, that one I definitely...
Like, every time we play Tales of Phantasia, the GBA version, I'm like, this is like Summer Night if you had, like, less control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. That one I remember. There was some weird one on the PSP called Miyama and Mar Chronicle. I think I'm the only person on this cast that had played that.
Never even heard of it.
Yeah, it was just some weird RPG. That's the only way I can describe it. And ended on a cliffhanger. Never got any other game in the series. So that tells you how popular, in air quotes, that game was.
So what you're saying, we need a special episode of the RPG Backtrack. Weird games we played and no one ever heard of.
I guess that'd be Rondo of Swords.
I mean, we have our April Fool's joke coming.
Oh, wait a minute.
Sorry, what do you, you'll get up something?
There's a future episode I realize I think I candy on.
Unless we have anything else to add, I think we're ready to go into the roundtable.
Well, can I just say that the voice acting in the GBA English version is hilariously bad?
I like a lot of my portable games, I only played that one mostly in mute. So I don't remember a lot of the music or a lot of the voices, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, it's just because of like how bad the GBA sound system is, but like the characters end up sounding the same depending on their gender. And then you got the beginning part where Dowse shouts, "What the heck is that?"
I didn't realize that bit was in English.
Yeah, that bit's in English.
Huh.
Yeah, I think in Japanese he says it cannot be, but it's... Like, that would have probably sounded a little more, you know, fitting than, what the heck is that?
Maybe it's just me, but, like, I never thought, like, the GBA having bad sound. Maybe that's just because, like, I've played too much GBA, and now I'm just not noticing the issues with GBA sound.
And the compression's just pretty terrible, and I think apparently the Japanese, like, it sounds a little better. In terms of like the sound quality itself, so something happened to the localization process.
So like games that I did like the music in, like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, I remember it sounding okay. Or the two Pokemon games too.
Mm. Oh, Golden Sun! Golden Sun has amazing music. Totally not fangirling for a game I really really like.
Yeah, the GBA is probably one of my favorite systems of all time, just because of I came out at the perfect time. I was in college. I'd bring it with me every day to play in between classes. That's how I put 200 hours into Final Fantasy Tactics and 200 hours into Pokemon Fire Red. And
it was also really light to hold. I think I had like both the Advance and the SP. And I think the heaviest thing on the Advance was the batteries you put in.
Yeah, which aren't a problem for the SP.
Yeah, and the SP was basically nothing.
Mm-hmm. Though, funnily enough, I had my fat Nintendo DS by the time this game came out. So that game kind of stayed in my fat DS for a while.
Like in early DS?
Yeah, the original
Yeah, the gray one that's a bulky.
I
mean, if I learned anything, my condolences. Because, like, I've seen so many of the early DS just break. Because, like, they needed a bit until they figured out, like, how to have, like, the monitors and the hinges not break.
Oh yeah, my first DS, like the thing broke off. I think I used the bottom part as basically a large GBA for a while before throwing that away.
Same, because that first year lineup of different games was not good.
True.
Me trying to play through Lunar Dragon Song, telling myself, "Oh, this game isn't that bad, right?"
I mean, the weirdest thing about the DS was, I think, at the start they tried to use every feature that the DS had. And among those was like the blow sensor where you blow into the microphone thing.
Oh
Some
yeah,
games used that and it was like, why?
I guess they just felt the need.
I'll never forget one called Magnetica that was like a Zuma clone, if you've ever played the PopCap game Zuma, and it having levels where you had to blow on the DS to clear fog to be able to see the level. And my parents looking at me like an idiot while I'm giving myself practically an asthma attack trying to blow on my DS to play this stupid game. Embarrassing, but that is what I liked about that. One thing I did like about that original fat DS though was how nice it was to keep a Game Boy game in the Game Boy slot and a DS game in the DS slot and just be able to switch back and forth depending on your mood.
And I can't remember. There was like one game where you, an RPG where you fled from combat by using the blow sensor. You had to like blow in to flee battles.
Oh,
It's on the tip of my tongue.
I can't. I feel like it was doing our dragon song, but I might be mistaken.
You can't say recognize that.
Yeah, I think we're ready for the round table, unless we've got anything else we want to talk about.
Nope.
Namco, if you're listening to this, please, please, please give me an HD remake. That would make me the happiest camper, so that Americans can finally play the superior, decent version of that game. Anyway, we're gonna have a brief musical interlude when we come back. We'll get into it a little bit more. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Tales of Phantasia. Now, we kind of already talked about the characters and our favorite moments and stuff like that. It's kind of a straightforward game, so I'm just gonna go straight into our memories, because I do remember what I was doing when I played the GBA version. A very specific memory. I don't know what about anybody else.
That's something I can recount.
Go for it.
Okay, so I at least for the first time I played it, I definitely remember playing it during my first few years of college. So I likely played that on the train to and from there. What I just remember though was my second playthrough because many years ago, is what I think this was might have been 2010 when the RP Gamer forums were still up. Every year they would try to do like a year of gaming. There was a year of Final Fantasy 1 year, and then another year was a year of Tales games. I only had the three at the time: Phantasia, Symphonia, and Symphonia: Dawn of the New World. So I had fun replaying Tales of Phantasia again. And even though it was a repeat play, I still spent over 80 hours on that game. It was just kind of fun playing it along with everybody else on the forum.
That's awesome. Leogram, what about you?
I mean, for me, it's not really memories, since I am streaming it as part of my GBA wheel, where I go through different GBA RPGs. So, like, my memory is a bit closer to home, as I played it just last year, and it definitely feels weird to play like an older game nowadays, especially if you then compare it to new ones. And how did it impact me? It confused me at times. I think I rarely have an RPG that, like, I want to play, but, like, I sometimes lose the story, like, I lose keys. But, like, it's nice seeing, like, the early days of the Tales games. Hope that it does it for memories.
Excellent. So I remember very distinctly having to take my poor mother to the, not the emergency room, but the minor emergency room, you know, the one that, you guys know what I'm talking about?
Like an urgent care?
Yeah, urgent care, because she had fell on the stairs and broke her ankle. And, you know, this was when I carried my DS with me at all times. And you know, it's like, oh, okay, well, let me get you into the waiting room. Or get you in, and they got her into a room, and they had to make me wait in the waiting room. And I had my DS with me. And I had Tales of Phantasia in there, but I was stuck in a dungeon. And I had no idea where to go in this dungeon. And the DS game that I had was Tao's Adventure, if anybody remembers that game. It was a roguelike spiritual sequel to Azure Dreams on the PS1. But it was only controllable via the DS stylus. So I've got one game that I can't make any progress in, and another game that absolutely sucks on my DS. And I am stuck in this waiting room for what felt like forever. I never felt more bored in my entire life. And then at one point I had to go, you know, it had been like 2 hours and I had not heard anything from anybody. And I go and like, hey, can I go back and see my mom, make sure that she's doing okay? And I go and she's in the little office, or in the little exam room, crying because she is in so much pain. And I go back out and I'm like, hey, did anybody check on her to make sure that she was okay? She's in so much pain that she's crying. You know, basically kind of having to read the nurses the riot act because they had forgotten about my poor mother who is hurting because of a broken ankle. And I always associate that memory with Tales of Phantasia because it's like, I need something to do, but I am so stuck in this dungeon. I have nowhere to go. And smartphones haven't been invented yet, so I can't look up where I need to go. It was miserable. So, yeah. I don't know how amusing that memory is or not, but it's amusing to me. And I do believe that is a show. Oh, we're celebrating.
I mean, if you want, I still have a wildcard question.
Okay.
Favorite summon?
Ugh.
Can you even remember them?
I want to say Volt, because I like Volt's design.
Then I go with Luna, just for like how she appears in the GBA version. Because like in the GBA version, she comes down on her moon, and then you have like a neon sign that spells her name.
Oh,
and
right.
I find that so hilarious.
I always found it kind of interesting and weird that the summons in this game and Secret of Mana shared a lot of DNA. Like, wasn't a lot of the names of the Secret of Mana characters almost the exact same names?
Never played Secret of Mana, but Sword of Mana is basically the same, and Undine is definitely the same. I think Ifrit is also. Gnome also exists.
There's a Luna.
Luna exists. There's no Maxwell. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen a Maxwell in Mana.
I think there was a Shade in both of them.
Yes, can remember that one. There was not a Vault.
Yeah, there wasn't a Vault, unfortunately.
But there was like a lot of overlap. And I think it's just because like a lot of the summons and certs usually get taken from the same mythology, mm-hmm. if I had to guess.
Yeah, I don't remember what mythology specifically, like Undine and Sylph come. Well, Sylph, I think, is Celtic. Undine, I'm not sure. I don't know.
Is Germanic, I'm tempted to say.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's a YouTube video out there somewhere that goes in.
Even if
about...
I would assume that, like, the German mythology just stole it from the Greek mythologies and nymphs.
Yeah, because a lot of mythologies do kind of steal from each other, so not surprised. But yeah, I do believe that's a show. And apparently we're celebrating all sorts of birthdays, because next show we're talking about Legend of Zelda's 40th anniversary. I am 43. I am only 3 years older than Zelda. I feel old. I don't know if anybody else agrees.
I'm 35. I also feel old.
Oh, I'm older than you, and my knees tell me every day. Kel?
Yeah, I forgot that you were a couple of years older.
Yep.
So, but that's going to be an interesting potluck episode, because I think each of us are picking one Zelda game to talk about, or we're going to do sort of a roundtable episode all around the board. Put it this way, it's going to be a little bit of an experiment, just to kind of shake up the show a little bit, give us some more stuff to talk about. But I'm looking forward to it. We can even call back to our Zelda Where to Start article that came out recently.
Well, that's true.
I think that'll be fun. So that being said, thank you, Cassandra and Leo Grimm, for hanging out with us tonight.
Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
And thank you, Matt, who I could not do this show without.
No problem.
And thank you, listener. Tune in a pair of weeks, where we're going to talk about the Legend of Zelda series as a whole. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you later.